chips on the ground. Something was glittering among them. I knelt down and discovered it was a silver lighter with the letter B engraved on it.
"Don't touch that!" I looked up to see Campbell glaring at me. "Larry, get her out of here. Have her wait by the main entrance. Be sure to get a full description of her friend so we can get an APB out. I'm going to radio in and make sure the team knows what's up."
McLean came over to my side, carefully sidestepping the lighter, and led me out of the area. That was actually a major relief. I heard the sirens of more police cars and then an ambulance. When we finally got to the main entrance, I collapsed on a bench. I robotically answered McLean's questions about Dina. He said something about not going anywhere, but I barely registered it. There were cops everywhere now, some with dogs in tow, others in plain clothes. They were questioning all the remaining visitors and asking for ID. The park worker who had called the police for me was now being interrogated in earnest, about 30 feet away from me. He caught my eye and mouthed the word, "Sorry." I looked away without acknowledging him. I could care less if he felt guilty about not initially believing me. I could care less about him. I had to focus on pulling myself together. But every time I tried to form a coherent thought, images of Barbie overwhelmed me. There was so much blood. Was it possible for one person to bleed that much? Where the hell was Dina? I couldn't panic. I had to think logically, had to work this through. The lighter. Had the B been for Barbie? But it had been so far from the body. Of course, that didn't mean anything. Barbie could have dropped it on the way in, before the attack. Or maybe she had seen the attacker, dropped the lighter, and tried to get away. Or maybe the lighter wasn't hers at all. Maybe it belonged to the murderer. Whose name started with B? No B initials in Dina's name, thank God. Who else? Not Anatoly Derinsky. What had been Jason's last name? Jason... Beck. I jumped up with the intention of running to the phone, but I was blocked by two plainclothes officers. The woman was around my height with medium brown hair pulled back into a low ponytail, and the man was Latino with his hair cut in a military-style buzz cut. The woman flashed a warm smile. "I'm Detective Peters, and this is Detective Gonzalez. We need to ask you a few questions. Why don't we sit down?" I felt like screaming. I didn't have time for this shit. I had to find Dina now. I really have to use the phone first.
"Why is it so urgent that you use the phone?" asked Gonzalez.
"I don't think B is for Barbie."
"Excuse me?"
"They found a lighter at the scene that had the letter B on it. I saw it. I don't think it stands for Barbie. I think it stands for Beck. Jason Beck. That's Dina Lopiano's boyfriend." It took Peters all of 2 seconds to grasp my implication.
"Do you know where this guy lives?"
"No, he works at some bar in the Lower Haight. I'm not sure which one." I gave them a description of Jason while Gonzalez scribbled it down.
"I'm on it."
He gave his partner a quick nod before leaving us. Peter sat down on the bench and gestured for me to do the same. I glanced once again at the phone. There was really no one to call. The police were already there, and Dina wasn't home. I just felt like I should be actively doing something, making phone calls, turning every stone over by hand until I found my friend, my best friend. "Miss Katz?" I became aware again of Peters's presence. I sunk down to sit beside her without responding. "Miss Katz? Why do you think your friend's boyfriend might have done this?"
"Because he's out of his mind, that's why."
"Can you elaborate?"
"He thinks he's a vampire."
"A vampire?"
"Yeah, or at least he wants to be a vampire and is trying to be one. I'm not quite sure."
Peters put her pen down. "So this guy's a wannabe vampire?"
"Something like that. Look, I'm not really clear on the specifics. All I know is he thinks he's Dracula, and that all the other legendary characters of his kind are real, and he lives in hope of being added to the coven of some blood-sucking literary figure."
"Wait a minute, are you serious?"
"Yes."
"And your friend is dating this guy?"
"She has a taste for the offbeat."
"I guess." Peters made a note to herself. "Okay, let's talk about the events that led up to your finding the body. You told Officer McLean that the only reason Barbie was here was to tell Dina that you were going to be late. How did that come about?"
"My mom's bladder infection." Peter's pen hovered over her notepad. "I'm sorry, I pushed my hair back with both hands. I'm not being very clear. I'm just a little shaken up.
That's understandable. Let's just go step by step, okay? Take your time. Now, what's this about your mom's bladder infection?
A new realization overtook me. She was taking everything I said to heart. I could tell this woman about the events of the last few weeks and there would be an investigation. They would find my stalker, figure out who killed Barbie, and everyone would be safe, again, including Dina. I had to believe that Dina would be safe, too. I angled my body so that I was facing Peters.
Well, the events that led me here really started a few weeks ago when I got this weird note in the mail. I went through every detail of the things that had been happening to me and made a point to include the dates and names of the police officers I had reported them to. I went into more details about my suspicions concerning Jason, although I did leave out Dina's suspicions about Anatoly. I also omitted the part about JJ Money and Tolsky, for fear that I would come across as a conspiracy theorist freak. I ended my account with the discovery of Barbie's body. The thing is, Barbie and I had worn our hair done in a similar style today, and we have the same skin color. I can't help but think that she wasn't supposed to be the target of the attack. That the real target was me. I think I was supposed to die the same death as Kitty.
There. That was it. I had told her the whole story. And throughout my account there had not been one scoff, one eye roll, one snicker, nothing.
Well, maybe not nothing. I could tell by Peters' expression that she was definitely taking me seriously, but there was more to it than that. Her mouth now formed a straight, tight line, and her eyes seemed to have narrowed from their original shape.
Miss Katz, who can attest to your whereabouts for the last 3 hours?
My whereabouts? Well, like I said, I picked up my mom's prescription about 40 minutes ago, then I brought it to her.
Wait a minute. Are you accusing me of something?
I'm asking you a simple question, that's all. What pharmacy did you go to?
The panic that had begun to subside began to rise again in the pit of my stomach.
Miss Katz, do you remember what pharmacy?
What? Oh, right. Golden Gate Pharmacy on Noriega? I'm sorry, but why is this relevant? What exactly do you think I did? Gonzalez approached, smiling broadly.
Miss Katz, we found your friend.
My eyes widened.
Dina?
She had some car troubles. She came by here to see if you had left yet. I filled her in on what's going on. She's pretty upset. She's waiting for you outside the gate.
I jumped up, and Peters rose too.
I think we should question Miss Lopiano first.
Gonzalez's smile disappeared. He looked at me with a new intensity, then at Peters.
Got it. Do you think Miss Katz should come down to the station with us for more questioning?
No, I have all the information I need from her right now. Thank you for your cooperation, Miss Katz.
I can't see Dina?
I'm sure she'll contact you after she's answered a few of our questions.
The look on Peters' face told me there would be no negotiating on that point. I nodded to Gonzalez and turned to leave.
One more thing, Miss Katz.
Yes?
If you're planning on leaving the city, we'd appreciate a phone call.
I had no idea how I was able to keep it together enough to drive home. Every time I got stuck behind a slow car or a red light, I had to battle the overwhelming urge to leap out of the Mustang and run home as fast as I could. That's all I wanted now. To just be barricaded inside my flat with Mr. Katz and to never come out. I was forced to park 4 blocks from my place. Normally that would have been a minor irritant, but today the length of the walk was way outside my comfort zone. I peered at the sky through the windshield. It was now a cool shade of blue-gray. I stepped out of the car, took a deep breath of the rapidly cooling air, and booked it to my apartment. I was at the door to my building, keys ready, when I felt a hand reach out and grab my shoulder. Without hesitation, I spun around and punched the intruder square in the jaw. Unfortunately, the intruder was Anatoly.
What the fuck did you do that for?
Well, why the fuck did you sneak up on me?
I didn't sneak up on you. I was walking by your place on the way to my own, and I saw you and stopped to say hello. And then you punched me.
Oh, yeah?
Well...
Actually, that was probably out of line, huh? Anatoly didn't answer. He just stood there and massaged his jaw. I pursed my lips to suppress a nervous giggle. Every instinct was telling me that this man would never hurt me. Unfortunately, it didn't appear that he could say the same about me.
You have time to come up? I could use a friend right about now.
You just punched me.
Oh, give me a break. You could stand up to terrorists in the Middle East, but you don't think you can handle yourself against little old me?
Once reminded of past exploits, Anatoly removed his hand from his chin, although he clearly wanted to continue to cradle it.
Come upstairs, and there might be some ice in it for you.
I was amazed at how normal my voice sounded, as if my world wasn't on the brink of collapse.
Anatoly shook his head.
You are the craziest woman I have ever met, but he followed me up anyway. When we got up to my apartment, I made a point to lock the door behind us before retrieving the ice pack from the freezer.
Are you going to tell me why you hit me?
You have no idea what kind of hell I've just been through. Actually, I'm kind of glad I hit you. It was like a stress reliever. I feel like I could think straight again.
Great.
Anatoly, I need some advice. Can I get the cold pack first?
What?
Oh, God, I'm sorry. Here you go. I gently placed the pack against the spot where I had hit him. Is that okay? He slid his hand over mine.
Yeah, it's okay.
The image of Barbie's corpse bleeding all over the dirt temporarily blinded me. I needed to talk to Anatoly about what was going on. I needed someone else's opinion on what I should do because I was completely out of ideas. But I also needed him to hold me. I desperately needed to lose myself, if only for a little while. I needed him to help push the images out of my head and force me to experience the moment and nothing else. I just needed him. I pushed myself up on my tiptoes and, removing the ice pack, kissed the spot where I had decked him just minutes ago. Better?
Much better.
My lips made the journey to his, and when his tongue began to toy with mine, my fear was scorched by an even more intense desire. He maneuvered his hands under my shirt and caressed my back. I felt my bra loosen and a little moan escaped me. He was backing me into the bedroom now. I could feel him pressed against me. I was pulling on his neck, trying to bring him closer, although by that point it was a physical impossibility. His teeth were grazing my neck. I don't think I have ever been so desperate for someone in all my life. I wanted to touch every part of him. I wanted him to devour me. I wanted him to fill me. We were in the doorway of the bedroom now. His breath tickled my ear.
I read your book.
You what?
There are some things in it I'd like to try.
My heart stopped beating. Dina's warnings were blaring in my head. Anatoly was still touching me, but I couldn't feel him. All I could feel was terror. I pushed myself away from him.
Get out.
What?
I'm not kidding. Get out now or I swear I'll scream.
What the?
I squeezed past him, ran into the kitchen, and lunged for the butcher knife. I want you out of here now.
Sophie, I don't...
Now!
He rushed me. He grabbed my arm and slammed it against the refrigerator. The knife fell to the ground. He held my wrists above my head, his face hovering above mine, and it quickly became clear that I no longer had any control over the situation.
I don't care if you are a psychotic bitch. You are never to pull a knife on me again. Got it?
I opened my mouth to scream, but no sound came out. Anatoly released my arms and gave me a final shove against the cold door before turning around and leaving. I spent the next hour crouched on the floor staring at the door, the knife in one hand and the phone in the other. When it rang, I pressed the talk button and lifted it to my ear without uttering a greeting.
Sophie. Sophie, is that you?
I exhaled for the first time in what felt like a century.
Dina. Are you all right?
Mentally or physically?
I am so sorry about Barbie, I said.
What the hell is going on, Sophie? What's happening?
I don't know.
I looked down at the knife.
I just don't know.
Sophie, I'm really freaking out here. Can you come over?
Anatoly just left. Dina was quiet for a moment.
He just happened to show up?
Something like that. You might have been right about him.
How far away did you park?
4 blocks.
Okay. Here's what we'll do.
I'll go over there. Watch from your window. When you see me double park, come on down quickly.
Got it. Oh, and Dina?
Yeah?
Bring your mace.
I'm holding it right now.
40 minutes later, Dina showed up with Marianne in tow. I had been waiting in the lobby, so I was able to jump into the car before Dina even pulled to a complete stop. Marianne leaned back and squeezed my hand. I managed a meager smile. I didn't expect to see you here.
I figured there's safety in numbers, Dina said.
I'm not really comfortable about leaving Mr. Katz.
Mr. Katz? Are you kidding me?
Dina made eye contact through the rearview mirror.
My employee was just killed with a hatchet, and you're worried about your cat getting lonely?
I'm sorry. Of course you're right. It's just I'm a little confused about what to feel or think. It's like I'm living in this horrible nightmare that I can't wake up from. I'm pretty sure that someone is trying to kill me, and nobody seems to be able or willing to help me.
We're going to help you.
The definitiveness in Marianne's voice startled me. Dina looked at Marianne and then back at the road.
Yeah, we are. We are going to find the asshole who's doing this. We'll get the proof we need, and we're going to get his ass locked up. Enough is enough. I've lost an acquaintance. I am not going to lose a friend.
And how exactly do you propose we do all that? I rested the full weight of my head against the window. The police don't believe me. They think I'm a suspect, for God's sake. If this is the guy who killed Tolsky and J.J. Money, then he's gotten away with the murders of two people who are a hell of a lot more resourceful than me. So how are we supposed to stop him now?
Simple, Dina answered. We beat him at his own game, or more accurately stated, we're going to beat him at your game.
I don't get it, I said. Marianne looked relieved.
Sophie, he's acting out a part, Dina explained. He's following the script to a T, and you wrote the script. Now all you have to do is play the part of Alicia Bright.
Alicia Bright never dies, Marianne said slowly.
Right. And she always gets her man, Dina said. And Sophie is a lot more qualified to play the part of her own heroine than this psycho is to play the part of her villain.
But this isn't a work of fiction, Dina. This is real life. My life.
This is life imitating art, and you're the artist. So, Miss Bright, it's time to go back to my pad, put our heads together, and solve this mystery. I rolled my eyes. Go team.
I think Dina's right, Marianne said. We can figure this out. After all, we're three intelligent women, right?
Neither Dina nor I commented. By the time we arrived at her apartment in Noe Valley, I had begun to buy into Dina's reasoning. As long as he chose to commit the crimes in my novels, there was not a single thing that he could do that I couldn't predict. I could do this. I could solve this. I didn't have to be the victim. I could be the hero for a change.
I pulled off my jacket and started clearing some space on Dina's dining room table.
Okay, Dina. You get all three of my novels out. Even though he's only been working from sex, drugs, and murder, we should be prepared in the event that he chooses to branch out. Marianne, you act as secretary and write down everything that's happened up to now and compile a list of suspects.
Dina gave me a high five. Raise the roof. Alicia Bright is in the house.
Chapter 12. If you want to turn your life around, you're going to have to start making things happen and stop allowing things to happen to you. Sex, drugs, and murder.
At a quarter to midnight, Dina, Marianne, and I were all reviewing each other's notes. We had each taken one of my books and had recorded every crime that I had ever written. The only violent crime in sex, drugs, and murder that our killer had yet to reenact was the beating with the golf clubs. But in the other books, people had been lynched, burned, drugged, and decapitated, just to name a few. It kind of gave me the creeps, which was rather sad considering I'm the one who wrote it. I should have written romance novels instead.
Erotica would have been good.
Dina tossed the book she had been reviewing in the middle of the table.
I wouldn't mind reenacting some of that.
You're such a pervert, Marianne said. I raised my hands for a truce. We're sticking to the subject at hand. Let's do suspects again. Who knew when and where we were supposed to meet?
Jason knew, Dina admitted.
I told Anatoly.
Well, I wasn't invited, so I didn't tell anyone.
Marianne's lower lip protruded enough to form a guilt-inducing pout.
That was an oversight that I would think you would be thankful for, Dina pointed out through clenched teeth.
Okay. So other than Anatoly, Jason, Marcus, my mom, and obviously Barbie, did anyone else know? Dina rested her elbow on the table.
I think that's it.
And no one knew that Barbie was going unless, of course, she told someone.
I guess we'll never know the answer to that, Marianne said.
Hell, they all could have told someone, Dina said. Your mom makes a career out of telling the world your business, and Marcus is a hairstylist, for Christ's sake.
I'll call Marcus in the morning and find out. I jotted a little note to myself. The only people my mother had time to tell all this to are the women in her senior group, and they were all too busy tasting Edith's new spicy meatballs to bother with me.
Dina laughed. I hope they had antacids on hand.
I bought them the economy-size bottle. I nodded the end of a ballpoint pen. Did Jason see Barbie when he was at the store this morning? Dina's back stiffened a little and she turned her gaze to the wall.
He left 10 minutes before she got there.
I thought about that for a moment, but decided I'd get back to Jason later. I shuffled the papers in front of me until I came to the sequence of events page. All right, we know why I was late. What about you, Dina? What exactly happened to your car?
Nail in the tire. I must have rolled over it right when I was leaving the store. It was bent in half, so it started a slow leak. But apparently every time the wheel went around, it pushed the nail in a little farther. It wasn't until I had driven 5 miles that enough air had escaped for me to realize what the problem was.
Pretty convenient coincidence. I tapped my pencil against the table. I've never gotten a nail in my tire before. Plus, you weren't exactly parked next to a construction site. You were on Union, which has got to be one of the most pristinely kept streets in the city.
That is weird.
Marianne used her hands to sweep her hair up into a playful crown of curls.
Hey, I just thought of something. What if it wasn't a coincidence at all? Maybe somebody did it on purpose.
Nah, Dina said. I think it was an accident. Kind of like the whole Tolsky wrist-slitting thing.
You're never going to let that go, are you?
Will you two knock it off?
I slammed my hand against the table. I can't be bothered with playing referee tonight. We need to move on to the details of the murder. I didn't want to do this. I didn't want to relive it, but I knew this was the only way. The prone image of Barbie filled my mind again. It was very, very, well, it was excessive.
Hacking somebody up with a hatchet is pretty excessive, all right.
Dina crossed her arms in front of herself protectively.
But we already discussed this. He's just copying the crimes that you wrote about in your book.
That's just it. I wrote that Kitty was killed with just 4 strokes of a hatchet. 2 to the back, 1 to the chest, and 1 to the back of the head. I paused to suppress the urge to gag. Barbie was hit a lot more than that. Dina swallowed hard.
How many times did he hit her with it?
I don't know. A lot. Dina, if I hadn't seen what she was wearing earlier, I wouldn't have known who she was. Dina looked away.
She told me her parents were in town for a visit. She was going to meet them tonight for dinner. I wonder if they know. Do you think the police will be able to notify them?
Marianne made little circular motions with her hand against Dina's back.
The detectives will find them, I'm sure. Did you know her well?
No, I make a point not to socialize too much with the salespeople outside of the store. But she was a lot of fun to work with, though. She had moved here from Las Vegas, left an abusive boyfriend, checked herself into rehab, gotten clean and sober, just really got her shit together. A lot of good it did her.
A new possibility rang in my mind. How abusive was her ex?
I don't really know. She didn't talk about him a lot. I got the feeling he was a major prick, though, and my guess is he's the reason why she went by Barbie instead of her birth name, whatever that is. She was always making comments about how Mark wouldn't let her do this or that. Stupid shit, like dye her hair or get her tongue pierced.
Both Marianne and I automatically put our fingers over our tongues. The police will probably consider him a suspect, I said. Does he still live in Vegas?
I assume so. I remember her commenting once that he was the main reason she left. He did call the store a few times. It rattled her a lot. I don't think she's the one who told him where she worked.
Well, it's pretty unlikely that he's responsible for any of this. I made a sweeping gesture over the books and papers that now littered the table. It doesn't really fit. Still, it couldn't hurt to check into it.
You know, Barbie and Kitty had a lot in common.
Dina tapped her ring finger against her chin.
Both of them had sketchy pasts. Both were promiscuous, or at least perceived as such. Maybe she was the intended target after all.
Possible. Maybe you could do a little research into her life and history? Do you have a way to get in contact with her friends and family?
I know I have a few in case of emergency phone numbers, plus her parents will probably contact me to collect the few things she kept at the store. I'm sure I could manage a few delicate questions.
Right, Marianne said, because you're so good at being delicate.
I can be delicate.
A sly smile crept onto Dina's lips.
You should see what I can do with a feather.
I hesitated for a moment. What can you do with a feather?
Sophie, please don't encourage her, Marianne said.
Okay, let's get back to the murderer. If he's being a copycat, why did he hit her so many times? And why did he hit her face? All that blood. Don't think about it. You know, I don't think that Barbie's resembling Kitty is all that relevant after all. No one knew she was going to be there. I really think somebody who was expecting me saw the hair and the skin coloring and the whole thing was a horrible case of mistaken identity.
All right, but if the assailant was Anatoly, he would have known instantly that it wasn't you.
True. It might have taken Jason an extra second, though. He could have approached her from behind thinking it was me and only realized his mistake after she saw him. Then he would have had to kill her to keep her from talking. Plus, he would have been pissed off, so that would make him extra violent.
It's not Jason.
Dina, I'm not trying to be a bitch here, but we have to look at all the possibilities, and Jason is a possible suspect. He knew I had done something to my hair because he was standing next to you when we were on the phone this morning, and he had opportunity to put a nail under your car. Dina opened her mouth to disagree, but then reluctantly closed it. She had never been very good at ignoring facts.
Do we know if either Anatoly or Jason has read your books? Marianne asked.
Dina did a double take, and I brightened in surprise.
Good question, Marianne.
Thank you.
No. Really? It was relevant? Thought out?
Dina gave me a quick shake of her head. I was overdoing it.
Right. Well, both Jason and Anatoly have made a point of telling me that they have.
Marianne wrote that down in her notepad.
What about the connection between Tolsky and J.J. Money? Do we have any more information about that? Did Jason or Anatoly have opportunity in those murders?
Dina and I exchanged looks. Those are things we need to look into, too, I said. Maybe tomorrow you could go to the library and look up any articles that you can find on the two guys?
Articles on Anatoly and Jason?
Dina smiled and put her arm around Marianne.
Thank God. For a minute, I thought aliens had come and taken over your body.
Huh?
That's my girl.
Ignore her, I said. The articles that I want you to look up will be on Tolsky and J.J. Money. Marianne scribbled their names. Look up D.C. Smooth, too. That's bound to turn up some stuff. Keep an eye open for anything that sounds strange that has happened in the last year. Did they make any complaints about stalkers? Did any weird stuff happen to them in the months before they died? Also, see if you can find pictures of the funeral and check for Jason or Anatoly in the background. It's a long shot, but it can't hurt to look.
I'll call Jason and see if I can get him to admit to any trips to New York.
Marianne's pencil stopped. Dina was looking past me into space. I knew how difficult this was for her. I felt like going around the table and putting my arms around her, but I knew she wouldn't accept that. Be sure to do it on the phone, I said. Try not to meet him in person until we're able to prove his innocence, okay? Dina recognized my olive branch and smiled.
What about Anatoly? Are you going to try to pry information out of him?
I don't think Anatoly's talking to me.
Why not?
I kind of punched him in the jaw. I apologized and everything, but then he started talking about my book and I pulled a knife on him. He got a little pissed off.
Dina clucked her tongue. Men are so sensitive.
What I will do is try to get an appointment with Tolsky's daughter, I said. She doesn't think his death was a suicide, and I want to know why.
I guess we all have our assignments, then.
Dina stretched her arms over her head. Marianne giggled.
This is so neat. I feel like one of Charlie's angels.
Funny. I was thinking more along the lines of Powerpuff Girls. How's the mantra go?
Dina tilted her head to the side.
Part sugar, part spice, and part kick-ass. I want to be in charge of the kick-ass part.
I balanced my chair back on two legs. Dina, as far as I'm concerned, you always kick-ass.
I know.
Okay, just remember that this is not a game. People have been killed, and we have to make sure that we're not added to the list. Study the crimes from my books, review them every day. I think I'm the target, but if Barbie was purposely assigned the role of Kitty, then we're all in danger. So stay alert, stay far away from any public lynching sessions, and whatever you do, don't play any golf.
Marianne made another note to herself. No public lynching, no golf. Got it.
The room got very quiet. Marianne looked up from her writings.
That was a joke, guys.
We all busted up.
Marianne and I slept over at Dina's. Well, maybe slept is the wrong word, at least in my case. My fear had been replaced by pure adrenaline. Who needed the SFPD anyway? Dina, Marianne, and I were going to crack the case on our own, just like the Powderpuff Angels, or whatever. We could do it. The alternative was... Well, there was no alternative that I was willing to entertain, so there it was. We would be victorious. Marianne woke up at 9, and we both had time to shower and down some coffee. She went off to the library to do some research before her evening shift at Neiman's, and I went home where I was greeted by a very angry Mr. Katz. I'm sorry. I know you don't like being alone. I was over at Dina's trying to figure out a way to stop my would-be killer. That didn't seem to pacify Mr. Katz at all, so I tried distraction instead. So, anything exciting happen while I was gone? Any strange sociopaths come in and rearrange our bookcase or anything? No? How about phone calls? Any phone calls? I looked at the flashing number on my answering machine. 11. I had been gone for less than 24 hours and I had 11 messages? Nobody's that popular, or at least I'm not, which meant that there was something wrong. I looked to Mr. Katz for some kind of clue, but he seemed nonplussed about the whole thing, so I resorted to pressing the button. The first message was from my mother. What is this? You're discovering bodies now? Leave it to you to be attacked on Sunday and find a dead person on Tuesday. Why can't you live a nice, normal life like your sister? All this violence is giving me ulcers already. So the media had served up yesterday's incident for public consumption. Fantastic. The next 10 messages consisted of 9 calls from reporters and 1 message from MCI, who could apparently save me a bundle on my local calling plan. It was in anticipation of days like these that God invented the delete button. I reluctantly called my mother back and was relieved when there was no answer. I really was a horrible daughter. Leah hadn't called, which meant either that she didn't know, or more likely that she did know but didn't leave a message. I looked at Mr. Katz, who was swishing his tail over an empty food bowl. I might still be able to save myself from the familial doghouse if I go over to Leah's right now and tell her about yesterday in person. That way, I could tell Mama that I stopped by her house first, but she wasn't home. I shook a knowing finger at my cat. It's all about plausible deniability. Mr. Katz let out a loud meow, which I took to mean, I don't really give a shit what you do as long as you give me my kibble. I obliged him, and then, after taking a few minutes to contemplate the issue of Leah, grabbed my purse and car keys and went off to her home in Forest Hill to do the right thing. Leah answered her door 2 minutes after I rang the bell. She was wearing a very expensive pair of diamond studs that Bob had recently bought her, a pristine knee-length beige skirt, and a white silk blouse featuring an eye-catching blue stain that bore a suspicious resemblance to smashed fruit. Her eyes narrowed when she saw me.
Well, will you look what the cat dragged in?
Huh. That's funny. Last I checked, the polite way to greet visitors was to simply say hello.
Don't hello me. I swear, I just don't get it. Are you trying to put yourself in dangerous situations? Are you trying to get yourself killed?
So, I take it you saw the news this morning.
Yes, I saw the news, and it's on the front page of the paper, Sophie. Bob called to tell me that it's all his associates will talk about, how his sister-in-law is the new Calamity Jane. You could at least have told me personally.
I'm here, aren't I? Leah scoffed and ushered me in.
You know, Mama tried to call you, and when you weren't home, she called me.
She closed and locked the door behind me.
I listened to her go on for about an hour while Jack dumped yogurt on his head. I'd tell you to call her, but I think she went to the senior center so she could complain about you to other people.
Oh, gee. And I was so looking forward to talking to her right now. Leah leaned against the door, and we stared at each other for a moment. Finally, she stepped forward and gave me a hug.
I'm glad you're okay, she whispered.
Me too.
We heard a crash, and Leah immediately pulled away and ran to the living room, where a blue-faced Jack had poured all his toddler Lego blocks out of their container and was now dispersing them around the floor so they might better complement the sundry toy dinosaurs and crayons that were already spread about. Jack, honey, no. I told you no more than 3 toys at a time. She put her arms out to the side to balance herself after almost tripping over a pterodactyl. I do not have time for this. The nitwit will be here in less than 5 minutes, and now I have to brew the tea, fix the snacks, and clean the living room.
You mean Cheryl? Why would you invite Cheryl to come into your home?
I never invite her. She just has a way of forcing herself on people. She called last night to say that she wanted to see Jack, which you know is a big lie. She probably slept with some Hollywood big shot and is looking for someone to listen to her gloat.
So tell her to go to hell.
Leah rolled her eyes upward as if questioning why the Lord had failed to grant her sister the logic of a flea. She's Bob's sister. It doesn't matter if they can't stand each other. It's my obligation as his wife to receive her and show her how much better our life is than hers. She reached down and restrained Jack before he was able to decorate the walls with a red crayon. Her eyes fell down to her shirt. Oh, my God. She stood up and pulled the fabric away from her to give me a better view. Blueberry. I have a blueberry stain on my Ellen Tracy.
I sighed and sat on the edge of an ottoman. Oh, come on, we're talking about Cheryl here. Just tell her that Cindy Crawford was seen sporting a blueberry stain at La Jolla's Cheesecake Factory. By tomorrow, her entire wardrobe will have a fruit salad theme.
That's not funny, Leah said sharply, but I could tell by the way she turned her head away from me that she was hiding a smile.
She quickly buried any hint of amusement and went back to being stressed.
I can't believe this. The minute Bob gets promoted, I'm hiring a nanny. She checked her skirt to verify that the damage was isolated to one spot. You're going to have to watch Jack while I change.
I immediately stood up. Oh, gosh, Leah, I would, but I've got to get...
Sit down.
I sat reluctantly. It's funny how clichés always end up being true. I had made this visit because I had thought it was the right thing to do, and where had my good intentions led me?
Straight to hell. Just keep him busy for 3 minutes, that's it, and don't let him do any further damage.
And how do you suggest I accomplish that great feat?
I don't know. You're a writer. Tell him a story. He has a very good attention span for stories. The pediatrician says it's a sign of giftedness.
Leah turned and raced up the stairs before I could protest. I had a hard time believing that Cheryl was going to be very jealous of Leah's life. My eyes moved to Jack, who was holding a green crayon threateningly. I got down on my knees and wrestled the crayon from him.
A story, huh? Okay. Once upon a time, in a land far, far away, there was a little village that lived in fear of an evil monster.
I held up a Tyrannosaurus for Jack's inspection. He sat up a little straighter, and his blue eyes widened with interest. Well, what do you know? He did like stories.
So this monster, whose name was...
I put the T-Rex down in front of me and tried to come up with a suitable monster name.
Smirnoff. The evil monster Smirnoff, and this mean little guy here is his sidekick, the devious Jack Daniel.
Jack carefully poked at the velociraptor I had placed next to Smirnoff.
Every Saturday night, Smirnoff and Jackie D would lure the weaker-willed villagers to their lair, and the next morning, the people would all suffer from horrible ailments. This went on for years, and the villagers were beginning to suspect that they were doomed to a life of headaches and silly behavior, until...
Da-da-da-da! I held up an impressive-looking triceratops.
Look! It's our heroine, Janice! She's come to save the day!
What are you teaching my son? I looked up to see Leah in the doorway looking horrified. I was, teaching him about the evils of addiction. Aren't you the one that always says kids need to learn about that stuff young? Leah snatched the Triceratops from my hand just as the doorbell rang. Behave yourself. She put the dinosaur on the end table as if it were a valuable centerpiece and went off to receive Cheryl. I leaned over to Jack.
Some people don't need Janice, I whispered. Some people would benefit more from the assistance of our other hero, Mr. Bong.
Sophie, I haven't seen you in eons.
I pulled myself to my feet and tried to smile at the bottle blonde and the too tight mini.
Hi, Cheryl. How are you? Great. Oh, and look at little Jack.
Jack glanced up at the sound of his name and then promptly went back to testing the non-toxic label on the crayons by sticking two in his mouth. Cheryl wrinkled her nose in distaste as I carefully removed the now slimy crayons from his lips.
Leah, you should really clean his face and get him some decent clothes, she commented while idly adjusting the clasp of a trendy but obviously cheaply made necklace. He'd be so much cuter that way.
Leah was standing behind Cheryl, making psycho-like stabbing gestures at her back.
Guess what?
Cheryl made eye contact with me as she waited for some kind of prompting. I tried really hard not to roll my eyes. What, Cheryl?
Less than an hour ago, I stopped by the Ritz to pick up my check, and you'll never guess who was there. Leonardo DiCaprio. Of course, those of us who know him just call him Leo.
Well, that's... I shrugged, giving up on the idea of feigning interest. Cheryl didn't seem to notice.
So tell me, she continued, are you still going to be writing a screenplay for Tolsky Productions?
Thanks to Tolsky's untimely death, that project's been put on indefinite hold.
Oh.
Cheryl's voice went flat.
Leah, did you say you made snacks?
She turned her back on me and faced Leah, who now had her hands innocently laced behind her back. Of course, Cheryl. I just picked up the most incredible brie.
Ugh, do you have any idea how much fat is in that?
Cheryl looked down at Leah's figure and smiled.
Of course not. You've never been one of those superficial people who worries about watching their weight. Gosh, it must be so nice to be able to just let yourself go.
I stepped back to better avoid being electrocuted from the sparks I knew would be imminently flying from Leah's head, but to her credit, and my shock, she kept her tone steady.
Well, I suppose I do spend less time on my appearance than I used to, but that's what happens once you've settled into a committed relationship with a man. Oh, I'm sorry.
Leah put a hand on her cheek in a half-hearted attempt to fake embarrassment.
You've never had a meaningful relationship. How thoughtless of me to have brought attention to it.
I was impressed. Leah had actually learned how to insult people without messing up her good wife and mother image. If I had been in her shoes, I would have said something much less elegant, like, get the fuck out of my house. Although as far as I was concerned, my way would have produced better results. Jack, who had been toddling around the room, removed Janice from her display position and started smashing her against a defenseless Smirnoff. I stepped in front of him so that he was partially hidden behind my legs. So, Cheryl, I understand that Tolsky made reservations at the Ritz the night before he died? Cheryl started at the sound of my voice and turned around in surprise. Apparently, after I had given her the bad news about my screenplay, she had promptly forgotten my presence.
Yes, that's right. I never got to meet him, she said dismissively before turning around again to trade more insults with Leah.
But he'd stayed at your hotel before, I pressed. I remember him mentioning that he was staying at the Ritz when I met with him. Cheryl regarded me with renewed interest.
I'd forgotten that you lunched with him. Was there anyone else with him? You know, he and Tarantino were very close.
I've never met Tarantino. Cheryl's eyes glazed over again, so I tried to come up with some phony celebrity sighting that would keep her attention long enough for me to sneak in a few more questions. Leah, you did tell her what we did after the meeting, right? You know, about how you, Alex Tolsky, George Lucas, and I all got together for 5 o'clock cocktails? Leah's smile could have outshone the sun.
You know, I may have forgotten to mention that. You really should meet George, Cheryl. He's such a nice man. Of course, he doesn't fraternize too much with hotel clerks.
This time her insult was somewhat undermined by Jack, whom she had to rush to before he knocked over a table lamp. Cheryl looked like she was on the verge of setting Leah's hair on fire, but at least she was paying attention. So, I continued,
Alex was staying at the Ritz during that visit, right?
Yes, he always stays with us when he comes up to San Francisco, but I've never been at my post during the times that he came and went. Have you and George Lucas stayed in touch?
Oh, yeah, we're drinking buddies. Did Tulsky come up often?
As far as I know, and I know everything that goes on at that hotel, he's only been there 3 times, twice in the 3 months before his death.
That was a lot of visits in a short period of time, especially when you consider that he had planned on coming up again. That would have made 3 times in less than 4 months. There was something to that. Was he planning on filming a movie up here or something, I asked?
Probably. Everyone loves filming in San Francisco. You know, Keanu Reeves was up here filming recently. He is such a cutie. He made a point of making conversation with me when he checked in and out. I think he had a little thing for me. Leah, you have no idea what it's like for me to be constantly put in the position of fielding the advances of so many attractive, rich men.
I can't imagine, Leah cooed. I read in People that a lot of the Hollywood stars have given up on the practice of hiring prostitutes and now simply have their flings with average women. I didn't believe it when I read it, but it sounds like there's some truth to it after all. Jack, put down the fire poker.
This was like watching heavyweight boxing, except a lot more gory. I heard my cell phone ringing in the foyer and gratefully excused myself. I checked the number quickly before answering. Hey, Dina.
Are you sitting?
Yeah, I'm sitting, I lied. What's going on?
I talked to Barbie's parents. They told me that the police have made an arrest.
What? Wait, hold on for a minute while I find a better place to talk. Cheryl and Leah had made it to the kitchen and Jack was close behind them. Either Leah hadn't noticed that he had gotten his hands on a permanent ink marker, or she was hoping that Cheryl's miniskirt was her son's next target.
Leah, I've got to go. If you talk to Mama before me, tell her I'm fine and I'll stop by soon.
But you can't leave. Somebody's got to eat the brie.
I'll try it next time around.
Cheryl smiled brightly at me.
Well, I'm glad we got a chance to catch up. Call me next time you and George get together. The three of us could have drinks at the terrace.
Yeah, that'll happen.
Leah?
I ended my sentence with a little wave and ran out to the sidewalk before I pulled the phone back to my ear.
I'm back, Dina. Now, what do you mean they made an arrest? Who the hell did they arrest?
Barbie's ex.
No way. But I thought he was in Vegas.
Not for the past week. He's been in San Francisco following Barbie around. Her parents gave me the inside scoop. Jack the Ripper was a pussycat next to this freak.
No, no, this doesn't make sense. He couldn't be the killer.
Maybe not, but he was at the crime scene either during or right after Barbie was offed.
How do they know that?
The lighter was his. The man was going 95 on 280. They found traces of her blood on his clothes.
My eyes traveled to my rental car parked in front of Leah's garage.
Dina, this doesn't make sense, I repeated.
Yeah, no kidding. But I gotta tell you, with his history, it's no fucking wonder that the cops think he's guilty.
I leaned against the hood and waited for her to fill me in.
As a teenager, he was convicted once for sexual assault and once for rape. As an adult, he's done time for beating the shit out of his ex-wife and dealing coke. But the thing is, he's in three-strike country now. He could get life for shoplifting at Walmart. And since they already have evidence that he's violated the restraining order Barbie had against him...
Got it. I want to talk to him.
I do too, Dina said. Actually, I want to rip him a new asshole. Do you think the cops will let me do that if I ask really nicely?
I sighed and tapped my fingers against the windshield. I think I should do this on my own.
How come you get to have all the fun?
Because you're just going to antagonize him.
And you're going to bring him a batch of homemade cookies?
I'm going to ask him questions, and if you're standing over my shoulder telling him what a prick he is, he may not be in the mood to answer. I heard a faint scraping noise on the line, probably Dina's teeth gnashing together.
I think you're wrong on this one. I think we should do a good cop, bad cop deal. You be the good cop, and...
Do you really think that would work? More gnashing.
No, but I really want to be the bad cop.
Some other time. Hey, once we've cleared Jason, why don't you do some role-playing with him? God knows you have all the costumes and the props.
Already done it. It's not the same as the real thing, although I did develop this rather unique interrogation technique.
More information than I need right now? I made a mental note to myself to drill Dina about the details later. Interrogation techniques and feathers? Just had to know. Where's he being held?
At the Bryant Street location. And Sophie?
Yeah?
Don't forget to ask the police about the new asshole thing, for future reference.
While driving to see Mark Bacon behind bars, I tried to wrap my mind around the latest turn of events. Of course, it was possible that Barbie's ex-boyfriend suddenly decided to chop her up with a hatchet, the same weapon used in sex, drugs, and murder, just days after someone vandalized my car in a manner consistent with the same book. But somehow it seemed that the chances of that happening were right up there with Ed McMahon personally delivering me a check from Publishers Clearing House. When I got to the jail, I spent a few minutes prying information out of the deputy sheriffs. Mark was being held on charges of reckless endangerment, violating a restraining order, and drug possession. He had yet to be charged with Barbie's murder. No doubt the DA was taking his time, making sure he had an ironclad case. After all, what was the rush? The guy wasn't going anywhere. One of the deputies escorted me to the visiting room. Several men seated behind a thick pane of glass seemed to be competing for the title of King of the Trailer Trash.
Here he is.
I sat opposite a thin man with a scarred face. Where did I know him from? Maybe I'd met someone who looked like him? Simultaneously, we picked up the phone on our respective sides. His eyes moved very slowly from my waist to my chest. He never quite made it to my face. Funny, he hadn't touched me, yet I suddenly felt the need to go through a decontamination process.
You're the hoe from the store.
Excuse me?
You came out of that pussy shop and told me to go in and check it out.
The pussy? Oh, wait, I knew who this guy was. He was the one outside Guilty Pleasures the day I met Jason. He was also the tourist who'd rushed past me as I was entering the botanical gardens. Chapter 13. Lots of people try to be sleazy, but a few individuals have it down to an art form. Sex, drugs, and murder. I involuntarily recoiled. He scratched his chin, probably lice.
So what's your deal? He said. You don't look like no public defender.
That's because I'm not.
Then who the fuck are you?
Sophie Katz. I was an acquaintance of Barbie's.
Oh, fuck, I don't need this shit.
He smacked the counter with the base of his palm.
First off, her name's Bonita. She just pulled this Barbie shit out of her ass. Second off, I didn't kill the bitch, all right?
I don't think you did. Mark finally moved his gaze north of my boobs.
What's that?
I don't think you killed her. Four distinct horizontal lines formed on his forehead as he scrutinized me. After a long pause, he shrugged and took a deep sniff.
If you know I didn't do it, why don't you tell the fucking pigs that? Did you do it?
No.
Then what the fuck are you doing here?
Like I said, I think you're innocent of this, which means that whoever did do this is still out there. That makes me a little nervous, so I was hoping you could help me figure out who the guilty party really is so the police could lock up the right guy.
You want me to help you out?
Oh, good, you can hear.
What the fuck do you want me to do? I'm locked up.
Yes, I did note that. All I want you to do is answer a few questions. He took another long sniff.
Why the fuck should I do that?
I don't know, maybe you don't want to be charged with a murder you didn't commit?
What the fuck difference does it make? This is California, bitch. They got me on my third felony as an adult. It don't matter if I get convicted of murder or violating that fucking restraining order. Either way, I got life. So why should I fucking care?
You should care because it is California, a state where capital punishment is alive and well. No pun intended. Mark didn't seem amused, so I continued. Did you see Bonita's body? Mark looked away.
Yeah, I saw it.
She was hacked up. Her body, her face completely mutilated.
It was about as violent and gruesome as a murder can get. Do you really think that with your background the judge is going to show any leniency whatsoever? Mark didn't say anything. Good. Then you won't mind taking a few moments out of your busy schedule to answer some questions.
Fuck.
You really like that word, don't you?
I like the word, all right.
Mark's gravelly laugh sounded out of place in the hellhole we were in. But then again, if anyone could find amusement in hell, it was probably appropriate that it be the Antichrist.
Saying it ain't as good as doing it, though. Too bad they don't allow conjugal visits no more, huh? Maybe if you ask real friendly-like, the guards will let you blow me through the bars. You colored bitches are always good at sucking cock. You swallow, honey?
How trashed must Barbie have been to have hooked up with this maggot? Unfortunately, I didn't have the luxury of indulging my nausea. This was a business trip. How was it you happened to find Barbie? The hell with him. She changed her name to Barbie, and that's what I was going to call her.
Uh-uh. Fuck this shit. You're trying to get me to admit that I broke my restraining order.
Oh, give it up already. You called her work how many times in the last week? You don't think her co-workers are going to testify to that? Everybody knows you violated your restraining order, and I personally don't give a shit. Now let's try this again. How did you find Barbie? I could tell by the constipated look on his face that Mark's little hamster wheel was spinning.
I was in the area where she works, and I noticed her get in her car and pull out.
Oh, please.
I wanted to talk with her.
About?
The bitch fucking left me for no reason, and when she split, she stole $500 of my fucking money. Nobody steals from me. I sure as hell wasn't gonna let her get away with that shit.
Mark stopped and straightened himself up, apparently remembering that he was supposed to be striving for delicacy.
Not that I was planning nothing. I just wanted to talk to her now that she'd had time to chill out. So I drove in the same direction she was going.
Thank God I wasn't a defense attorney. If this guy was ever allowed to testify, the jury would probably vote to have him electrocuted right there on the stand. Okay, so you ended up at Golden Gate Park. Why didn't you get out of your car and talk to her right away? Why did you even let her go into the botanical gardens?
I couldn't find any fucking parking. That's the part that the pigs don't buy. I fucking hate this city. It takes 4 hours to park a motherfucking car. Is there something funny?
I could barely stay in my chair. The inmates and visitors next to us were giving me strange looks, but I couldn't stop laughing. I managed to quiet myself down enough to resume the conversation. Let me be sure I'm getting this. You were going to assault your ex-girlfriend, but you didn't because you couldn't find a good parking space?
I wasn't going to assault her. I was going to try to talk some sense into the bitch. You know, if I'd been able to find a spot sooner, I might have been able to save her life.
Wow, what a knight in shining armor you are. I tapped my toe against the hard floor. So you eventually found parking and you followed her into the garden. How did you locate her? The place where she was killed was a little off the beaten path.
I started walking around. When I couldn't find her right away, I started calling her cell phone. She always had the loudest fucking phone, and she always had it set to jingle bells. When I got near the redwoods, I heard it, and I found her.
She was already dead?
Yeah, she was dead. She was chopped up like a piece of fucking meat. I don't get it, man. I could see some guy getting pissed and slapping her shit around, or maybe she'd been leading him on and he wanted to bend her over and show her what a hoe is good for, but to hack her up like that? That's really sick.
Here comes that bile again.
What?
Nothing. I rubbed my hands against my jeans in a fruitless attempt to rid myself of his vileness. Okay, so you found her hacked up. How did the blood get on your clothes?
By being a fucking idiot, that's how. She was lying on her stomach, and for some stupid reason I turned her over to see... Fuck. I don't know what I wanted to see. It was pretty fucking obvious she was dead. Fucking stupid thing to do.
Why didn't you notify the police of what you saw?
What the fuck you been smoking? What was I gonna say? That while violating my restraining order, I found my ex who happened to have been whacked just a few minutes earlier?
Right. So when you left, did you see anybody suspicious around?
Suspicious? Fuck, I don't know. I wasn't looking. I had to stay focused on how I was gonna get my ass back to Vegas before the cops came looking for me.
Uh-huh. So it was a pretty quick mourning process, then?
What?
Never mind. Okay, so you didn't see anyone who seemed out of place or dressed kind of...
funny?
Funny how?
Well, like someone wearing clothing that could hide a hatchet, like a trench coat or, say, a cape?
A cape?
Yeah, you know, a cape, like a vampire's or something.
What, are you shitting me?
Okay, how about a tall guy with dark hair and big hands?
Hey, I told you, I don't know who I fucking saw. I wasn't paying attention. The only person I remember seeing was... was you.
I stole a quick look at the nearby deputy. You saw me just as I was getting there and you were leaving.
I don't fucking know that.
Excuse me?
How do I know you were just getting there? Fuck, you could have been just getting back after dropping off a bloody axe in your trunk.
I'm here trying to prove you're innocent and you're trying to pin the crime on me?
Hey, baby, it's all good. I like 'em twisted. It just means I gotta remember to tie you up before I fill that dripping pussy of yours. You do have some cream in those panties, don't you, sweetheart? I can always tell when a bitch is wet for me. I'm talented that way.
The inmate in the neighboring chair chuckled. He winked and stuck his tongue out at me suggestively. My jaw had gotten so tight that it actually ached. I took in a sharp breath and managed a fake smile. The next time you get laid, there won't be any pussy involved. Mark lost a little of his color. I leaned in conspiratorially. I think the term is fudge packing, and you being the skinny little thing that you are, I have a feeling you'll be the one playing tight end. I pushed my purse strap up on my shoulder, preparing to leave. I don't have any more questions. I got back to my car and rested my forehead against the steering wheel. If I hadn't been so intent on finding the true killer, I really wouldn't have had a problem with Mark taking the rap for a crime he didn't commit. And who knows, maybe he actually was guilty. Hell, he could even be my stalker. But not likely. Mark wasn't the obsessed fan type. Maggots rarely read books. Hustler, maybe. I propped my chin up enough so I could stare out the window. There was nothing more I was going to find out about the details of Barbie's death. Mark was the only other person who had seen the body directly after the murder, and he didn't know anything useful. I had to work this from another angle. It was time to talk with Shannon Tulski. When I got home, I thumbed through my address book until I found a number for Tulski Productions. After Tulski's death, the project of turning my book into a movie had been put on hold. I hadn't pushed the issue because at the time I was busy writing my latest novel, and when that was done, some psycho decided to dismantle my life. If it isn't one thing, it's another. Shannon was in publicity, which had nothing to do with me. Still, I had a contract with the company for which she worked. That should give me a little leverage. I picked up the phone and started dialing. It took me over a half hour just to be put through to the correct office. Finally, I got a woman who identified herself as Miss Tulski's receptionist. Hi, I'm Sophie Katz. I've been commissioned to adapt one of my books into a screenplay for Tulski Productions. I was wondering if Miss Tulski has any openings within the next few days to meet with me?
Miss Tulski doesn't usually deal with films until they're produced and ready to market.
I realize that, but I'm hoping she'll make an exception for me. I spoke to her father a few weeks before he... well, about 2 months ago now, and there were some things that we discussed that I was hoping she could clarify for me.
Hold, please.
Okay, maybe a contract wasn't quite enough leverage to pull this one off.
Miss Tulski says she can see you tomorrow at 3. Does that work for you?
Maybe I was worthy of Cheryl's envy after all. The waiting room looked like a cross between a music video and a spread out of Home Beautiful. Everything was perfect, right down to the waxed leaves of the ornamental fig tree. I crossed my legs at the ankles and tucked them under my chair in hopes of drawing attention away from my scuffed shoes. I had spent a ridiculous amount of money on the last-minute airfare, and the only morning flight that had been available took off at 6 a.m. My return flight was scheduled to leave LAX at 8 p.m. So instead of packing a change of clothes and some toiletries for a 14-hour vacation, I had opted to bring just a purse and deal with being rumpled and baggy-eyed, since that seemed to be my look of late anyway. What I had forgotten was that people in L.A. don't rumple. Okay, maybe there was a little rumpling going on in South Central, but not in the Valley. Plus, they don't have bad hair days, they sure as hell don't wear scuffed shoes, unless that's the style, in which case they'll shell out an extra $400 for a pair of pre-scuffed Manolo Blahniks. And, thanks to collagen injections, the only bags these people had were made by Kate Spade. The receptionist cautiously put the phone down, mindful of her manicure, and framed her mouth into a placid smile.
Miss Katz, Miss Tolsky will see you now.
This was my moment. The thing was, I had no idea what to do with it. The woman I was about to see justifiably assumed that I had come to discuss some business matter, while in truth I was here to drill her about the details of her father's death. For the last 24 hours, I had been trying to come up with a way of stating my purpose without getting kicked out on my tush, but so far I was drawing a blank. The receptionist arched an eyebrow expectantly. I gritted my teeth in a way that I hoped resembled a smile and opened the office door. A woman with platinum blonde hair and a skin a shade of orange that could only be purchased at one of the best tanning salons stepped out from behind her Pottery Barn desk. I assumed she worked at Tolsky Productions, but there was little evidence of it. The only items that graced the desk's surface were a Sony flat-screen computer, a Mont Blanc pen set to complement her monogram stationery, and a silver 1940s-style telephone. No paper clips, no stapler, no anything that could be considered useful without being pretty.
"Miss Katz, it is so good to finally meet you in person." She extended her hand. "I'm Shannon Tolsky. I'm a huge fan of your work."
"Thank you, and please call me Sophie." I looked in at our clasped hands, thinking how she must moisturize hers 12 times a day, as smooth as they were. "I really appreciate you seeing me so quickly. I know you don't usually meet with writers."
"This project was near and dear to my father's heart. He talked about it incessantly. It really is criminal the way it's been put on hold, but maybe I could help you with that. You see, while I truly love publicity, I think that your adapted screenplay and the subsequent movie could use my talents in the area of development and production. I know that with my help, your book could be transformed into the next summer blockbuster."
"Oh, God, that's great. That's really, really wonderful. The thing is, I didn't come to talk about the screenplay." Her surprise registered only with a few quick blinks of her eyes.
"I see. Well, then, why exactly are you here?"
"I wanted to ask you about your father." Shannon's posture assumed a more militaristic position.
"If you're planning on writing a book on him..."
No, nothing like that. "You see, I read that you believe his death was the result of a murder. Do you still think that's true?"
"Yes."
She eased into her leather office chair without offering me a seat. "Well, so do I, and I think that the person that killed him has murdered before, and since, and plans on doing it again. In fact, I think I might know his next potential victim, so I was kind of hoping you could help me nail this guy." Shannon steepled her fingers in front of her chin.
"You know who killed my father?"
No. But I do have a few suspects in mind."
"You do?"
She took inventory of everything from my inappropriately sullied shoes to my frizzy mop. She gently swiveled back and forth.
"Anything you need me to do to prove that my father's death was not a suicide, I'll do."
"What, no security guards to escort me out? This was a little too easy. Do you mind if I sit?"
Shannon nodded toward a chair. "All I need you to do is answer a few questions."
"Go ahead."
"All right.
Why don't we start with why you think your father was killed? I've read articles about it. There were no signs of struggle. He even wrote a note."
"The note was vague at best. Nowhere in it did he say, 'I'm going to kill myself.' It didn't even say goodbye, just a whole bunch of 'I can't live without you' nonsense directed at my mother."
She reached into her desk drawer and pulled out a stress ball designed to look like the planet Earth.
"He was pathetic, but he wasn't suicidal."
"Well, that was catchy. Maybe they could have that one engraved on his tombstone. Were you and your father close?"
"Closer than I would have liked. I did have to live with the man for 18 years.
"So, you didn't get along?"
"Very perceptive."
She used her left hand to smooth her perfectly straight hair.
"He was an alcoholic, manic depressive. There wasn't a lot to like."
"You know, manic depressives have a high suicide rate."
"He managed to function perfectly well for 45 years without so much as nicking himself while shaving. He didn't all of a sudden decide to plunge the whole blade into his wrist. Anyway,
I thought you were trying to prove that my father didn't kill himself.
I am. I just need to understand why you think he didn't. I looked down at my palm and used an index finger to trace my lifeline. I read that your mother doesn't share your doubts.
But she doesn't have any incentive to now, does she?
My eyes moved back up to Shannon. I'm not sure I follow.
My parents' relationship had been over for years. The only thing they had in common was a house and a marriage license, and even that was imminently changing. She moved out just a few days before he... before they found him. When he died, she got everything. Everything. That's a lot more than she would have gotten in a divorce, even in California. And do you know what I got?
Something less than everything?
$900,000. That's it. A measly $900,000.
She began to knead away at Earth.
That's not even enough to buy a decent house. So now she's living it up with money she never raised a finger to earn, and I'm stuck living paycheck to paycheck until someone decides to kill her, too.
You don't make much here?
Oh, please, I barely make six figures.
She had pressed the little stress ball into her desktop so that it had come to resemble a sort of earth pancake.
The only way I'm going to get ahead is by marrying some sugar daddy. That's what I've been reduced to. Unless, of course, I can prove that my darling father was killed.
You can financially benefit from his death if it was murder?
He had a $5 million life insurance policy that would have been mine.
Uh-huh. So if you discovered that someone slit open your father's arteries against his will, that would make you happy.
Are you here to help me or judge me?
Funny. She looked and sounded much more socially adept than Mark Bacon, but there were some definite similarities. Something about that whole, I'm in it for myself and who the hell cares if anyone else is killed or mutilated along the way attitude of theirs. I sighed and tried to keep the disgust out of my voice. It sounds like your mom made out real well. Any chance she did it?
The police did look into that, but she had an airtight alibi. She was at a charity ball. She didn't leave until well after midnight, and then she got a ride to her friend's house where she'd been staying.
Maybe someone did it for her? A boyfriend, maybe?
I can only encourage you to look into it, but I seriously doubt my mother was having an affair. Who would want her? She's an anorexic, shriveled old matron with no personality worth mentioning. My father, on the other hand, was involved with someone. That's what spurred my mother to move out. To be honest, I'm surprised she left.
You expected your mom to hang out in an unhappy marriage after she found out that your dad was cheating on her?
You misunderstood me before. They were both perfectly happy with the marriage. It was just their personal relationship that was awful.
Okay, you want to explain that one to me?
My mother liked being Mrs. Tolsky. She liked the prestige, the party invitations, the money, basically the perks of the job. My father liked having a wife. Not just any wife, but the mother of his child. Do you know how many men in this town are still married to the mother of their adult children?
Can't say that I do.
You can count them on your fingers. So, as you can see, my parents were part of a very elite group.
Oh, I heard this story. He was in the Russian circus, and she, just a teenager herself, helped him defect.
If I have to hear that story one more time, I'll scream.
I pressed my lips back together. I didn't particularly want to hear Shannon scream. Although a bit of crying after I slapped that spoiled face of hers might be okay. Shannon freed Earth from her clutches and studied it as it gradually resumed its shape.
Fairy tales only exist in movies. There is no greater evidence of that than my parents' marriage. There was no intimacy, no passion. It's really a wonder that I was conceived at all. Nonetheless, marriages of convenience are usually stronger than ones of romance because they are based on logic. My mother is a very logical person. So why in the world would she risk her carefully cultivated lifestyle just because her husband discreetly went elsewhere for a little companionship?
He was discreet?
Shannon shrugged. I still don't know who he was seeing.
So how can you be so sure he was having an affair?
I found out from my mother. I didn't question it at the time. I didn't really care. Since his death, some of his friends and co-workers admitted to me that they suspected something. Lots of private cell phone calls and the like. But no one I've ever talked to will confess to actually seeing him with someone. The more I think about it, the more amazed I am that my mother found out at all.
Do you think your mother will talk to me?
No.
Even if you asked for me?
My mother and I are not on speaking terms.
For God's sake, Hamlet's family was closer knit than this.
Shannon, do you have anything that would point to murder other than, well, other than wishful thinking?
They did an autopsy at my insistence, and he had a blood alcohol level of 0.24, and he had taken several of my mother's Valium.
That doesn't sound all that strange. You just said he was an alcoholic.
But he didn't take pills.
Yes, but if he was going to kill himself anyway. I mean, if I were going to slash open my wrists, I would want to be as out of it as possible.
You don't understand. My father hated pills. He was tormented by the fact that my mother took Valium. When he broke his foot 8 years ago, he refused to take painkillers. Do you have any idea how many nerve endings are in the foot?
A lot.
Of course, he did drink himself into a stupor on a fairly regular basis. The man wouldn't touch an Advil, but he had no qualms about downing half a dozen vodka tonics.
Well, everybody has to have a vice. I shifted position in my chair. I've got to say, Shannon, the more I talk to you, the more I question my conclusion that this was a murder. According to you, he was an alcoholic with a mental illness who had just been abandoned by his wife of 30 years.
Did you ever see Silent Killer?
Yes, but...
Scott Reynolds' wife drugs him, gets him into the bath before he loses consciousness, then slits his wrists and leaves him there to die. Sound familiar?
Okay. But if I remember rightly, she uses a pretty heavy-duty drug to knock him out.
Excuse me, but what do you think hard alcohol mixed with 8 Valium will do to you? Yet he managed to cut 2 perfectly straight lines going up the vein of each wrist. Rather impressive for a man who shouldn't have been able to stand up.
I slid my foot back and forth across the hardwood. Shannon might be obnoxious, but she was clearly not stupid. What did the police say about that?
All they care about is making their own lives easy. Suicide with a note. Open and closed case, no actual work involved.
You don't have a copy of that note, do you?
Oh, no. Mommy Dearest wouldn't allow that. Too personal.
Shannon rolled her eyes as if her mother's desire to keep her husband's last words to her private was completely ridiculous. But you did read the note.
A day after his death, I fulfilled my family obligations and paid a visit to the grieving widow. The note was on the nightstand. I read it while she was in the bathroom. You should have seen the hysterics she staged after she found me with it. The woman should go into acting. She'd have a gold statue for every room in her house.
Right. Well, do you have anything else that might help me?
No. Oh, wait, yes. There's a chance that his mistress lives up in San Francisco.
His girlfriend lives in... My mind immediately went to Tolsky's frequent visits to the San Francisco Ritz. Wait, didn't I just ask you if you knew anything about his supposed lover?
No, you asked me if he had been discreet. I just chose to volunteer this. If you're going to play detective, you'd better learn how to ask the right questions. Isn't that what Alicia Bright would do?
If Mark Bacon ever got out, I was definitely going to set her up on a blind date. I leaned forward and gave her my most insincere smile.
Okay, then. Is there anything else you'd like to volunteer?
It is your 5 million on the line, after all.
Can't think of a thing.
Do you by chance have your mother's number?
She won't talk to you.
Why don't you give it to me anyway? Shannon released a rather dramatic sigh before pulling out a piece of notepaper to write down 2 of Margaret Tolsky's phone numbers.
Here's her home and her cell phone. I hope you like voicemail. My mother thinks it's chic to be unavailable. However, I believe the Chanel boutique is getting a new shipment today. I'll write down the address and directions. Maybe you'll get lucky and catch her there. Do you know what she looks like?
I've seen her picture before.
Shannon nodded and walked around the desk to hand me the information.
I'm afraid we're going to have to wrap this up. I have a meeting in a few minutes. We're trying to decide how to publicize Dark as Night. Not that it's really necessary. DC Smooth's current living situation will give the film enough publicity to keep it in the public eye for the next 10 years.
Someone must have sucked the oxygen out of the room because all of a sudden I was finding it difficult to breathe. DC Smooth? DC Smooth had a part in a recent Tolsky production?
Yes. It's not a huge role, but it's memorable. The movie's already controversial, and now with DC serving a 50-year sentence for murder, well, it'll be on the cover of every magazine around, from Time to Teen People.
So he did... Wait. Shannon was looking at me like I was completely insane, and I couldn't really blame her. Questions were spinning around in my head like a tornado, and I couldn't grasp any one of them long enough to voice it articulately.
I'm sorry, but I really must ask you...
Are you in contact with him? I blurted out.
With who?
DC Smooth. Is there any communication between Tolsky Productions and DC Smooth?
Well, yes, there is some communication with him. It's obviously a lot more limited now that he's been convicted, but he likes to be updated on developments.
Can you put me in touch with him?
Are you a fan? He's not talking to fans.
No, I mean, yes, but that's not why I want to reach him. I took a step closer to her, eager to explain my interest. I think there may be a connection between your father's death and J.J. Money's.
Really?
Shannon fingered her tennis bracelet as she considered the possibility.
That's a bit of a stretch, don't you think? Well, never mind. If you think researching it may prove that my father's death wasn't a suicide, then it's worth the effort. I'll see what I can do about setting up a phone appointment for you with D.C. Can I reach you at your home number?
I stood up. That would be great. I left it with your receptionist when I made the appointment. Do you need it again?
No, that will be fine.
She escorted me to the door.
Just be sure whatever you dig up is tangible enough to sway the insurance company.
It'll be my top priority.
Right. Well then, off you go.
One more thing. You don't by any chance know Jason Beck or Mark Bacon, do you?
Never heard of them.
How about Anatoly Derinsky? Do you know him?
Shannon wrinkled her upturned nose. Unfortunately, yes.
Chapter 14. The hot ones are always gay, married, or murderers. Sex, drugs, and murder. My hand fell from the doorknob.
You know Anatoly?
I believe that is what I just said.
How?
My father knew him when they were children in Russia. Supposedly, my father was some kind of mentor to him.
Were they in contact while living in the States?
Not much. Anatoly lived in New York, but when my father went back east, they would meet. And Anatoly paid a visit every other year or so. The man tries to come across as intelligent and competent, but in truth, he's a complete imbecile. My father told me they met when he rescued Anatoly from some kids who were giving him a beating. My father always had to champion the underdog, and Anatoly, being a Jew and all... Oops, no offense.
I knew by the way that Shannon had pronounced the word Jew that I should be completely offended. However, the only emotion I could manage was horror. When I didn't respond right away, Shannon made a show of looking at her watch.
I am sorry, but I really must get to that meeting.
Right. I'll be hearing from you later, then? About talking with DC Smooth?
I said I'll be in touch.
I nodded and walked numbly from her office. It felt like it took me an hour to get from there to my rental car. All my instincts had been wrong. I had shared a cab with him, spent the day with him, kissed him. Hell, I had almost made love to him, just a few hours after he had chopped Barbie up with a hatchet. I squeezed the keys into my palm until they made an indentation. How could I have been so stupid? I had been dating a serial killer. Not Dina. Me. This went way beyond the standard, I went out with him 12 times before I found out he had a wife faux pas.
How could I have been so completely deceived?
Dina knew, and she hadn't even met him. My horror started to melt into something else. Total rage. Fuck him. He thought he had me fooled? Well, guess what? I was 5 steps ahead of him. I jammed the key into the ignition and took off in search of a Starbucks. I was going to find the evidence I needed, hand it over to the police, and beat the living shit out of him before they had a chance to haul his sorry ass to his private cell on death row. I parked the car and called Shannon's mother on my cell as I got in line to order my Frappuccino. As I predicted, I got her voicemail. I cleared my throat before the beep. Hi, my name is Sophie Katz. I'm, an acquaintance of your daughter's, and I was a business associate of your husband's. Shannon gave me your number. I was hoping that we could talk for just a few minutes. There are just a few things I need to ask you. I left all my phone numbers and hung up. Hopefully my evasiveness would pique her curiosity enough to call back. Next, I speed-dialed Dina.
Guilty pleasures, how can we make you smile?
Dina, it's me.
Sophie, how's hell? Or do you prefer to call it L.A.?
Funny, it doesn't look like hell. In fact, it looks a lot like a Starbucks.
They have a Starbucks in hell. They only serve decaf. I winced.
I think Dante's Inferno would be preferable. But I didn't call to discuss my addiction. I wanted you to know that Jason's off the hook.
Yeah, I heard. I told you it wasn't him.
What do you mean you heard? Wait a minute. I brought the phone away from my ear just long enough to place an order. Okay, I'm back. Explain yourself.
First off, he was at a job orientation when Barbie was killed, and he has a solid alibi for the evening Tolsky was killed. I've verified all of it. Oh, and as far as I can tell, he's never been to New York. Secondly, I talked to Barbie's parents again. All of Mark's shit is hitting the fan. You know, I saw that bastard in front of the store a few weeks ago, but I didn't know who he was. I wish Barbie had seen him. Then maybe...
Dina coughed in a failed attempt to disguise the tremor that had colored her last words.
So, here's the deal. Mark was a chief player in a major Vegas drug ring, she continued, her voice back to its original strength. All the celebrity addicts purchased their happy juice from this guy. Maybe not directly every time, but his hand was always in the pie in one way or another.
Uh-huh. So how is this relevant?
How is this relevant? Sophie, it was him. J.J. Money was a known addict. He went to Vegas all the time, and I'm sure Tolsky made a few trips. Or if not, you better believe some of his buddies did. He had a major in with both guys. He's your stalker, and he's going to get fried for it. How's that for justice?
I collected my drink from the counter and took a long sip of whipped cream. So you think Mark is our psycho because he might have dealt drugs to J.J. Money and Tolsky, presuming, of course, that Tolsky has ever been to Vegas, which is a pretty big presumption considering it's based on absolutely nothing.
Oh, excuse me, amateur sleuth extraordinaire. Do you have a better suspect?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I do. I closed my eyes. I wasn't ready to verbalize it. That would make it too real.
Sophie, you there?
Anatoly. Anatoly and Tolsky were friends. I know it for a fact.
Oh, shit, Sophie.
I moved the brownie bits around in my cup. I couldn't think of anything to say.
Are you going to tell the police?
Tell them what exactly?
Right, we've been over this. So how are we going to collect evidence?
I got 2 leads from Tolsky's daughter that I think are worth following up on. The first involves researching one of Tolsky's extracurricular activities. He was having an affair with a woman who most likely lives in San Francisco. The line was quiet for a moment or two. Finally, I heard what I assumed was Dina sucking air in through her teeth.
So, you think Anatoly might be a woman?
The corners of my mouth began to shake, threatening the frown I had been wearing since I had spoken with Shannon.
No, I think that there's a chance that Anatoly knows the woman Tolsky's been dating. And maybe she knows me, and that's how he decided to make me his next target, or maybe the two of them are working together. That's what we have to find out. But Anatoly's a man. That fact doesn't require further investigation.
And you know this because you checked, right?
Dina...
Because I've seen some pretty convincing transvestites, Sophie, and some of the hardcore lesbians can give a whole new definition to butch.
I remember this one person came into the shop, and I swear, she was a member of that group Dykes on Bikes, and... Oh, fuck, didn't you say Anatoly drove a Harley? Do you think...
No, Dina, he's not a dyke on a bike. The woman at the next table gave me a funny look. I turned my chair away from her and continued in a hushed tone.
He's a male. He was born a male, he grew up as a male, and he is now just one big male.
How big? Are we talking cucumber or zucchini? Dina, I really need you to focus here, okay? We are not talking about sex. We are talking about murder. Well, actually, we're talking about sex, drugs, and murder. You are the one who came up with the title. Dina. Okay, I'm sorry. I just thought it might help to lighten things up a bit. So we have to figure out what Frisco chick was giving it up for Tulski. What else?
DC Smooth is featured in an upcoming Tulski production.
Oh, yeah, I think I read something about that. They filmed one of his scenes between court appearances.
Really? God, that is so weird. I mean, who are these people that they can be tried for murder one minute and then be putting makeup on to prep for their film debut the next? That is just not normal.
Sophie?
Yeah?
Focus.
Cute. I rested my elbow on the faux pine table. Okay. Shannon said that she would try to set up a telephone interview with DC for me.
My, aren't we the little criminal social climber? Who's next, Manson?
Hey, at this rate, you never know. Anyway, those are the only two bits of information that Shannon gave me that might possibly lead me to some sort of tangible evidence. If it doesn't work, if I turn up nothing...
It'll work. We know who the killer is, we know his strategy. It's just a matter of time till we nail him.
Time is the one thing we haven't...
We're going to get him, Sophie.
I slurped up the last remnants of my Frappuccino. I believed her. What choice did I have? I have 4 hours before my flight leaves. What should I do?
Why don't you try to contact Tulski's wife? Maybe she knows who the other woman is.
Tried that. She's presently missing in action.
Then try to relax and do some L.A. stuff. Go get yourself a drive-through Botox injection or something. Nothing will cheer a girl up like getting her face paralyzed.
I laughed out loud, causing a few of my fellow caffeine addicts to turn and look. I love you, Dina. No matter how down I am, you always find a way to get me up.
You have no idea how many men have told me the exact same thing.
I giggled and leaned back in my chair. A sophisticated but anorexically thin older woman walked through the door and got in line. She had tastefully dyed white blonde hair that she had shaped into a stylish shoulder-length cut, and her skin was unnaturally youthful. She looked incredibly familiar.
Sophie, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here. It's just that this woman walked in, and I know I've seen her before, but I can't place her.
Not all that surprising, considering your location. She's probably some struggling actress who landed a bit part on one episode of Melrose Place.
No, she's not really giving off a starlet kind of vibe. I watched the woman pat her perfect hair, and then it hit me.
Dina, I know her because I've seen her picture in the paper. It's Mrs. Tulski.
Wait, Sophie, are you sure? L.A.'s a big place, and it would be a pretty big coincidence if Mrs. Tulski walked into the same cafe that you're in just when you were hoping to talk to her.
I know, it's a miracle, but I swear to God, that's her.
I slapped my hand against the table as Mrs. Tulski approached the register.
That is why I love Starbucks. It doesn't matter how much money you have or what social world you're from, chances are you will still eventually end up at a Starbucks in order to revel in the taste sensation provided by the Frappuccino. It is the great equalizer of our time.
I'm serious, Sophie. You need to find yourself a 12-step program.
Yeah. Whatever, Dina. I gotta go. I hung up the phone and walked up to the bar where Mrs. Tulski was now awaiting her drink.
Mrs. Tulski?
The woman looked me up and down.
Do I know you?
No, but I just left a message on your cell phone. Mrs. Tulski angled her body away from me.
I'm sorry, but I don't have time for this right now. I have to pick up my drink and go.
Oh, this won't take long. I just think that maybe if we took a few minutes to talk, we could help each other and make sense of what happened to your husband.
I know how difficult it is to lose a loved one, and it must be awful to think that someone you cared for took his own life, but I think that your daughter may be right about it not being a suicide.
A barista announced the arrival of a non-fat sugar-free vanilla latte, and Mrs. Tulski snatched it up. She held it in front of her as if it could serve as some kind of barrier between me and her.
I believe your voice message indicated that you spoke to my daughter. Is that correct? Yes, and
did she seem like a person whose opinion you could trust?
I hesitated. There was nothing about Shannon that I trusted, but then again, I didn't trust walking skeletons who ordered non-fat sugar-free lattes either. Mrs. Tolsky took my silence as a reply.
There you have it. Now, if you'll excuse me, I must get to my appointment.
She turned her back on me and stormed out of the cafe. I ran out to the parking lot in hot pursuit. Mrs. Tolsky, wait, just give me 2 minutes.
We have nothing to discuss, she replied as she slipped into her Mercedes. Please refrain from making a nuisance of yourself.
Okay, just 1 minute, then. I raised my voice as she slammed the door and started the engine. I'll even buy you a frappuccino. It's low fat and everything. But Mrs. Tolsky just put the car into gear and drove away. Gosh, I whispered to myself. I can't imagine which of her parents Shannon takes after. The rest of my stay in L.A. turned out to be completely unproductive. I tried Mrs. Tolsky's cell a few more times, to no avail. I drove by the Tolsky's residence in hopes that I might see her or her car in the driveway. I didn't quite anticipate that the driveway would be the length of Route 66. Louis XIV would have been green with envy. By the time I got back to San Francisco, the only thing I wanted to investigate was my bed. I was a little nervous about the idea of spending the night alone in my apartment when a former member of the Russian and Israeli armies might be trying to kill me. But at least I knew who he was now. And he knew I knew. The knife thing hadn't been real subtle. So he would have to proceed more carefully going forward. Maybe I'd get lucky and he'd abandon his project and move on to someone else. Stephen King, perhaps. He was pretty violent. I took a cab from the airport. No long searches for the elusive parking spot tonight. Now I could just step out right in front of my door, crawl upstairs, and... I squinted my eyes to make out who was sitting on the front steps as the cab approached. It was a woman. As we got closer, I could see Marianne's curly brown hair. What the hell was she thinking, sitting out there alone like that? I quickly paid the driver and got out to meet her. Marianne, this is not safe. She jumped to her feet and grabbed both my hands.
I did the research on J.J. Money. Want to hear?
No, I wanted to sleep. I looked up at the windows to my place and then back to Marianne. She was beginning to cut off the circulation in my fingers. Okay, come up and tell me. I let her in, threw some food at Mr. Katz, and collapsed on the love seat. Meanwhile, Marianne was doing some kind of agitated little dance in the middle of my living room. Whatever she had discovered must have been big. I sat up a little straighter.
So, don't keep me in suspense.
3 weeks before J.J. Money was killed, his car was vandalized in an upscale parking garage.
They have upscale parking garages in New York?
Somebody painted something that looked like a gang insignia on his driver's side door. Have you ever seen the video for On Top?
Only the video they keep showing on the news. You know, where they show the guy bleeding in the alley the way J.J. Money later was bleeding himself after he was shot.
But earlier in the video, someone paints a gang insignia on a car, right on the driver's side door.
The veins in my hand bulged as I tightened my grip on the armrest. Marianne had her hands clasped in front of her and was simply beaming as she waited for me to respond. I opened my mouth, then closed it, trying to figure out what words would fully capture the feeling I was experiencing. Well, shit. I kind of thought those words summed it up rather nicely, but Marianne wasn't mollified.
Did you hear me? I said...
I heard you. I guess there isn't any doubt anymore. The murders are connected. This guy has a pattern, mess with the victim's car, and then... Well, then kill them.
Did anything happen to Tolsky's car?
I couldn't help but be irked by the enthusiasm in her voice.
I don't know, but I'm sure as hell going to find out. I'm sure it was vandalized. I'm just sure of it. J.J. Money's and Tolsky's murders are linked to what is happening to you, and I am the one who figured it out.
She looked like she was going to burst into a set of cartwheels. Congratulations, Marianne. That's great. Too bad I had to become the target of an intended homicide in order to prove your genius, huh?
Marianne's shoulders dropped from their elevated position.
I'm sorry. That probably sounded insensitive.
A tad.
It's just that I think I might have a gift for detective work, and that made me feel kind of good about myself, like I was smart.
I sighed and reached my hand out to her in apology.
I'm sorry, really. I'm just exhausted, that's all.
You have been indispensable in all this. I never would have made the connection between me, Tolsky, and J.J. Money without you.
Marianne was beaming again.
Thank you.
She hopped onto the cushion next to me.
This is so neat. It's like I've discovered this secret talent, kind of like when I first got into makeup. I mean, I can look at someone and immediately know if they're a spring or a summer or...
So did you find out anything that would link Anatoly to JJ Money?
No, nothing to link Anatoly or Jason other than the fact that JJ Money did live in New York and you said Anatoly did too.
That was never in question.
Yes, well, I confirmed it.
She leaned over to pet Mr. Katz, who was gently kneading her nylons.
Oh, but I did find something to connect him with Mark Bacon.
I slowly pushed myself to the edge of the love seat.
What?
I said...
I know what you said. What did you find? Could I have been wrong? Was it possible that the police had arrested the right guy and I wasn't the world's worst judge of character?
I found something to connect Barbie's ex with...
Listen to what I am asking. I stood up so I could better resist the urge to shake her. What did you find that connects JJ Money to Mark Bacon?
Oh, I was looking at some pictures of JJ Money that had been in the magazines, and there was one taken at some club or party in Las Vegas, and in the far background I was able to make out Mark Bacon. I wouldn't have noticed it if I hadn't just looked at a picture of him in this morning's newspaper. He looks so mean. Do you think they try to find pictures of criminals that make them look mean, or do they always look like that? I've always wondered...
Marianne, do you realize what this means? She sunk her teeth into her lower lip the way she always does when she discovers herself to be completely lost. Marianne, Mark could be our bad guy after all.
But you said the police were wrong about everything.
No, I said the police sometimes make mistakes, but that doesn't mean they're not right a lot, too. Maybe this is one of those right times. Please, God, please let it be a right time. Marianne freed her lip. She pulled Mr. Katz onto her lap and methodically scratched him behind the ears.
It would be nice if neither you nor Dina had been going out with a killer.
Yeah, that would be nice. I glanced down at Mr. Katz, who was now in a purring frenzy. I scratched him there all the time and he never reacted that way for me. You know what would be even nicer? Knowing that the man who was after me is locked up behind bars and ain't ever getting out.
Unless he breaks out. Oh my gosh, Sophie, what if he already has?
It's pretty hard to break out of jail, Marianne. Plus, it would have been on the news.
Are you sure? Remember when we watched that movie Copycat? Harry Connick Jr. escaped and was out long enough to kill two armed guards and he almost caught Sigourney Weaver, and I don't think that was on the news, otherwise Sigourney Weaver would have seen it coming. Oh, and in Bandits, Bruce Willis just jumps into a cement truck or something and drives out of the prison. He didn't even plan ahead for it.
Marianne?
Yes?
Those were movies. Marianne started at my rise in volume, thus upsetting Mr. Katz's little massage session. I'm sorry. Again. My hand went up to my temples. Really, like I said, I'm just very, very tired and on edge. I'm trying to cope with all this, but... God, it's just so much. Marianne removed my unfaithful pet from her skirt and encircled me in her ballerina arms.
It's okay, Sophie. It's all going to be over soon. We're going to figure this out and everything will be okay again. In the meantime, just remember, it could always be worse.
Someone may be trying to kill me and I don't know who. How can it be worse?
Well, there could be a lot of people trying to kill you.
I disengaged myself so that I could obtain enough distance to gawk at her. Her teeth went down on her lip again.
Not helpful?
She asked meekly. I think I'm going to bed now. Chapter 15. One man's tragedy is another man's apocalypse. Sex, drugs, and murder. I woke up the next morning groggy, but less ornery than the night before. Despite my insults, Marianne had volunteered to spend the night. I did feel safer with her there. After all, if the killer broke in, Marianne could try to engage him in conversation, and then the two of us could quietly make our escape while the intruder was trying to pick himself up off the floor. I threw on a robe, crept past the guest room where Marianne still slept, and went down to the lobby to collect the morning's paper. When I unrolled it a few minutes later on my dining table, I was greeted by a 6x8 color photograph of Mark Bacon. This was going to get a lot of publicity. Despite what people thought about big cities, people didn't often get hacked up in public parks. Homeless people died in the streets, gang members shot each other. An occasional wronged spouse opted for a gun rather than a divorce attorney, but going after someone with a hatchet, now that was thinking outside of the box. The phone rang, and I nearly went screaming for the door. Mr. Katz looked at me in bewilderment as I placed a shaky hand over my heart. This would be a good time to start smoking pot. I listened to my voice rattle off the greeting before the beep.
Soph, honey? You home?
I snatched up the phone. Marcus, if you are calling to berate me for not personally calling you after finding Barbie, I'm calling to admit that I'm a stupid little shit. I wouldn't blame you if you dumped me and replaced me with some rising star at Vidal. Although that would be a mistake because I know your hair like no one else ever will, but I'm a little shit nonetheless.
Why are you a shit?
You came to me for advice and guidance, and I told you to lighten up, let your guard down, and then look what happened. God, honey, I could have gotten you killed.
I sighed and pulled a box of sweetened puffed rice cereal from the cupboard.
First off, I didn't come to you for advice. I came to you for a deep condition and trim. You just gave the advice as a little unwanted bonus.
Go ahead, rip me apart. I can take it.
Marcus, there's nothing to take. Mr. Katz hopped up on the counter so he could glare at me at eye level. I put the cereal down and went for the kibble. I would have eventually come to the same conclusion you did. Maybe it would have taken a few extra hours, but in the end I would have called Dina, apologized, and made a date to meet her at the park. Nothing would have been different, except you'd feel less guilty, and I'd need a haircut.
Still,
no stills. It wasn't your fault. I put the bowl down and managed to remove my hand before Mr. Katz inadvertently ate it.
You do believe me now, though, right?
You can definitely count me among the believers. Too bad the police aren't.
Ugh, the police. They just always have to have their evidence.
Well, I'm trying to get some of that.
Are you playing sleuth?
Pretty much. I'm playing Alicia Bright. A few grains of the handful of cereal I had attempted to shove in my mouth fell to the floor. Thank God I didn't have video conferencing.
Oh, how fun! Can I play? I can be...
Does Alicia Bright have a sexy gay sidekick?
Nope. But I am the author. I could add you in.
Oh, definitely add me. Look, despite what you said, I really do feel awful about Tuesday. Can I take you out for lunch today as an apology? We could work on your mystery.
What the hell? Maybe you can help me make sense of everything because I'm sure as heck not doing a very good job of it on my own.
1:30 then? Lulu's? I haven't been to Lulu's in ages.
Lulu's it is. I'll meet you there.
I hung up the phone just as Marianne glided into the kitchen. She looked impossibly sexy in the oversized t-shirt I had lent her, and her hair had this tousled, come-hither thing going for it. I, on the other hand, was modeling long johns, fuzzy socks, and a hairdo that was somewhat reminiscent of a mushroom cloud. I managed to swallow enough of my jealousy to give her a half-hearted smile.
Did you sleep well?
Gosh, no. I tossed and turned all night thinking about everything. Can't you tell?
Life was so unfair. Mark Bacon's in the paper today. I led her over to the dining table and tapped the front page. Marianne leaned over it and examined the photo.
Wow, he looks like a total criminal.
He is a criminal.
Well, yeah. I don't know if you could look like that and expect to find a nice job. You know, this is why I think people should be more open-minded to the idea of men wearing makeup. If he just had a little under-eye concealer, maybe some foundation to lessen the appearance of that scar.
I'm meeting Marcus today. I'm going to bring him a little more into the loop. Maybe he'll think of something we haven't.
Like what?
Well, I don't know. I haven't thought of it yet. Marianne nodded solemnly.
I wish I could stay, but my shift starts at 1.
Too bad. We really could have used your brain power. Marianne smiled and excused herself so she could go make herself presentable. I took the time to stuff more rice puffs in my mouth. By 10:30, Marianne had taken off, and I was left alone to contemplate my life, whatever was left of it. I dialed the numbers for Margaret Tolsky and left messages. This time I said that I could prove that some of the things that came out in the press after Alex Tolsky's death were incorrect, and I wanted to be sure she knew the truth so her lawyers could go for a libel suit. That had to pique her curiosity. She may be an elitist, but she was also human. I was slipping on my coat with the intention of grabbing some coffee before I met Marcus when the phone rang.
Bingo.
I grabbed the receiver. Hello, Mrs. Tolsky?
Miss Tolsky, Shannon corrected. DC Smooth will be calling your house today at 12 o'clock Pacific time.
Wait, you... I checked my watch. But that's in less than an hour. When did you make the appointment?
Yesterday, before I left the office.
So why are you just telling me about it now?
I've been busy.
You've been busy? The word squeaked out at a couple of octaves above my normal pitch. I'm trying to prove that your father didn't commit suicide. I thought you wanted that.
I do, but I also have a life to live. Besides, this idea that D.C. has any connection to my father's death is just inane. He lives across the country, and he was in the middle of a murder trial when my father was killed. As far as I can see, you're wasting everyone's time.
I stared at the phone. If I threw it across the room, it might break, and then I'd miss the call from D.C. Smooth. I'd have to find something less important to smash. If you think I'm wasting your time, why are you helping me at all?
I don't think you're doing any major harm. Plus, you're one of two people who believe me when I say that my father didn't commit suicide. And if you're going to try to convince more people of that, then I will try to be as cooperative as possible.
Cooperative would have been calling me at the time you made the appointment.
Do you not want the appointment now?
No, don't be... I stopped myself before I said something that would piss her off as much as she had pissed me off. I want the appointment. I'll be here at noon.
Good. You'll let me know if you discover anything useful?
Oh, yeah, at least within the first 48 hours. I do have a life to live, after all.
Goodbye, Sophie.
Wait. I held the receiver in both hands as if that would keep her from hanging up. I need to ask you something.
What?
In the months before he died, did anything happen to your father's car? Was it vandalized, stolen, broken into? Anything he might have mentioned would be helpful.
Nothing happened to his car that I'm aware of. Unless you count his paranoia over his rearview mirror.
Meaning?
We had a business lunch about a month before he died. We got in a disagreement, as usual, and I left halfway through. 15 minutes later, he called me, irate, accusing me of readjusting his rearview mirror. He was drunk, of course.
Now, why did that sound familiar? I glanced over at my video collection under the TV set. Oh, my God, Shannon, that's it. In Silent Killer, the first person she killed was in his car. She was hiding in the back seat. The first thing the victim noticed was that the rearview mirror was askew.
Did you not just hear me tell you he was drunk? He probably bumped into the mirror when he was crawling into his car.
I threw my hands up in hopeless defeat. I reminded myself that I had no real interest in convincing Shannon of anything. One more question. Who's the other person who believes you?
Anatoly,
Shannon replied.
He's as certain as I am that it wasn't a suicide. If he wasn't such an idiot, he could help me prove that. Instead, I'm left depending on you, as pathetic as that is. Now I really must go.
Wait, what did Anatoly say? Hello? Shannon, are you there? Hello? I slammed down the receiver. She hung up on me. That cross-burning little tramp just hung up on me. I wanted to call Shannon back and ask her about Anatoly, but I was afraid that I would just alienate her completely. And the truth was, I might still need her help. Best to call her after a drink. Or a partial lobotomy. I turned on the television, hoping to find something that would distract me while I waited for DC Smooth to call. As it turns out, that wasn't necessary because the buzzer distracted me instead. Had Marianne forgotten something? I hesitated before pressing the intercom. Who's there?
Detective Lorenzo, I hope this isn't a bad time, but I need to ask you a few questions.
Well, he was about the last person I had expected. I buzzed him up in lieu of a verbal response and greeted him at the door. He nodded as he entered the flat. His smile lacked the necessary warmth to make it appear friendly. I glanced at my watch. I really didn't want him to be around when DC called.
Going somewhere?
He asked before making himself comfortable at the dining table. I'm expecting a call from a friend. What did you want to ask me?
I assume you've seen the news about Bacon.
I sat opposite him and pushed the newspaper in his direction. Kind of hard to miss.
Lorenzo looked at the picture with apparent disinterest. It was a pleasure to arrest him. He's a real pervert. But then, you know that, don't you?
I didn't like the way this was going. I visited him in jail after his arrest, if that's what you mean.
That is what I mean.
Why did you do that?
Lorenzo spotted Mr. Katz and made a little motion with his fingers. Mr. Katz took a step closer and allowed himself to be stroked. Maybe I should have named him Judas.
I went to see him because I wanted the opportunity to decide for myself if he was guilty or innocent.
And what did you conclude?
He asked. He's guilty of being a prick, but I'm not convinced he killed Barbie.
Interesting.
Lorenzo stopped petting my cat and took out a notebook and pen.
Do you think he's responsible for any of the things that happened to you?
I doubt it. He has no motive.
True.
He scribbled something down. This was getting boring. I glanced over at the TV, which I had left on. Montel Williams was asking why his guest wanted to marry a cross-dressing prostitute.
I was able to get the phone records for the day you claimed to have gotten all the prank calls, Lorenzo continued. There was one call from Ooh La La Salon, one from a telemarketer, and several from payphones in the Russian Hill area.
So the caller had been nearby. That wasn't good. Marcus called from the salon. As for the payphone calls, I didn't hear any background noise. Maybe something was placed over the receiver.
If you're right about Manning and Bacon, the prank caller could have been a woman.
I crossed my arms and tilted my chair back onto two legs. I know you're suggesting something, but I'll be damned if I have any idea what it is.
One of the phone calls was made from a payphone outside a nearby Starbucks.
A gasp escaped my lips. Anatoly was there that day. He had opportunity.
Oh?
Lorenzo laid his pen down beside the notepad.
I wasn't aware of that. In fact, the only person I'm sure was there was you. You made an impression on the cashier.
I almost fell backward in my chair. You're not suggesting that I made the calls myself. Lorenzo picked his pen back up.
You had opportunity.
And who do you think picked up the phone to answer the call? Casper the Friendly Ghost?
I see you have an answering machine. Is that new?
I shook my head so hard that I experienced a moment of dizziness. Not a good thing, since I was already feeling sick to my stomach. So you think that I set this whole thing up to make it look like I was being stalked?
Your words, not mine.
Yeah, well, they're your thoughts. And there's a problem with your theory. The last call I received was a little after 6:40 p.m. Less than 10 seconds passed between the time I got that phone call and the time that Marcus Betancourt came over to pick me up. Feel free to ask Marcus what time he showed up. Even an Olympic sprinter couldn't run from a payphone to this apartment in 10 seconds.
But the last call came from your cell phone.
Everything froze as I allowed the words to sink in. I had been in the shower. And after that, I had had the hairdryer on. And when Marcus had come to pick me up, I hadn't been able to find my cell phone. But it had been in plain view when I got home. I had originally assumed that had been an oversight on my part. But that wasn't it at all. Had the killer been in my bedroom? Or maybe the closet? My eyes met Lorenzo's. He wouldn't believe me. I knew that. And the more nervous I appeared now, the more convinced of my guilt he would become. I had to remain calm and be extremely rational. Most of all, I had to get him out of there.
Detective Lorenzo, things have obviously changed a lot since the DA got those phone records for you. An arrest has been made in Barbie's murder case, which is the only crime I have reported that has been investigated. With the exception of the statement I gave after Andy attacked me, and I think we can all agree that his crimes are completely unconnected to what happened to Barbie. Mark Bacon has been charged with that crime and is awaiting trial, which means that some, if not all, of the other detectives think he's the guilty party, and the DA's office obviously thinks it can convict. That means that you are doing this interview based on suspicions no one else in your department shares. And that means there is no real reason for me to subject myself to this. Unless the police thought I was working with Mark. But I didn't want to verbalize that just in case he hadn't thought of it. I rolled my shoulders back and tried to look confident. Now, if you'll excuse me, I'm expecting a phone call. Lorenzo stood up and walked to the door.
From anyone I know?
Yeah, Mr. None of Your Damn Business. Lorenzo laughed in spite of himself.
It's always good talking to you.
He went to the door and stepped over the threshold.
By the way, we dusted your car for prints. The only fingerprints inside the car were Mr. Dorinsky's, who I understand drove the car to and from the station, and yours. In fact, some of yours were right around the slashes in the upholstery.
Obviously, I touched it after I found it torn up. Lorenzo flashed me with another one of his insincere grins. Obviously. He calmly turned around and walked down the stairs. My bravado left with him. The fear I had been repressing washed over me like a bucket of ice water. My arms and legs were numb, and my lungs felt like they were lodged in my throat. There was no sanctuary. I could no longer go to sleep without fearing for my life. The same went for showering or even washing my face. How many times had the killer been in my home, and how many times had he been here with me? The phone rang and I nearly bolted out of the apartment before I remembered the scheduled interview with DC Smooth. I quickly closed and locked the door and crossed the room to pick up. I felt a rush of relief when the operator asked if I was willing to accept the charges for a collect call. Who would have thought that a call from a federal penitentiary could be so comforting?
Yo, is this Sophie Katz?
Yeah, I breathed. DC Smooth?
That's me. So what's this about? They're telling me you're some kind of private investigator. Who hired you?
I stared out the window and weighed my options. I could lie. He might be more cooperative that way. But I was tired and stressed, and I was bound to make an idiot out of myself. No, I'm a novelist. But I don't want to talk to you about a book or anything. I just think that you're innocent. I've always thought that you were innocent.
Yo, hold up. That's cool of you to be throwing me your support and all, but I'm not talking to fans. I don't have an unlimited calling plan here, you know what I'm saying? I gotta save my minutes for my family.
No, wait, I didn't explain myself well. I started pacing the room. I couldn't blow this. I'm not just calling to give you support. I think that the person who killed JJ Money is still out there. I think he's the same guy who killed Tolsky, and I think he just killed someone else I knew. I want your help so I can stop him.
That's fucked up, man. I didn't do shit, and I'm doing 50, and the motherfucker who shot JJ Money is out there icing people left and right? He's white, right? They won't let a brother get away with that shit.
I don't really know if he's white or not, but I think so. Did you ever meet a guy named Anatoly Derinsky?
I don't think so. What's the man look like?
Tall, about 6'2", dark hair, brown eyes, Russian accent.
Nah, I don't think I know him. Is he the killer?
I don't know. What about Mark Bacon? Silence.
Look, I know this call's probably being recorded. All I'm asking is if you know him. I met him once or twice in Vegas. I don't do business with the man. I think he hooked up JJ a few times, but that's just me speculating here. I don't know nothing for sure, except the man's bad news. People have their reasons for hanging with him. But if he didn't have connections, he'd have been ratted out and locked up a long time ago.
I sat back down. What kind of connections does he have?
You know, it's like I was saying, he knew JJ, maybe a few other pop stars and movie people and shit. I'm not saying nothing for sure, though. That's just shit I heard through the grapevine, you feel me? That's all I know.
He's in jail now. He's accused of killing his ex-girlfriend.
Yeah? Well, he probably did it. Like I said, bad news. You think he shot JJ Money?
Maybe.
Fuck, that man has a history that makes mine look like a motherfucking Disney movie. If there's a chance he killed JJ, why the fuck aren't the police checking it out? It's because I'm a brother. The cops look at me and they see black. A black man who beat the system and made it big and now they're trying to knock me down. This is bullshit.
You may be right, I said. I don't know. I looked out the window at the gray sky. But I'm going to find out if he did it, or if not him, who did. I'm going to find evidence. I have to, and when I do, they'll have to let you go. Racism aside, this is still a democracy. They can't lock people up for no reason.
You're a white girl, huh?
Half of me is really offended by that.
Look, you think you can get me out? Go for it. You know I got a kid coming?
Yeah, I think I read something about that.
My woman's 8 months pregnant. She's having a boy. I want to be there for my kid, you know? I don't want my son taking shit because his daddy's on the prison block. I've done some stupid shit, but I didn't do this. You hear what I'm saying?
Did you vandalize JJ Money's car?
No, man. I never fucking touched